Hello, welcome to Outside In. The year 2020 is finally coming to an end. I think along with pretty well everybody else, I think we'll be pretty keen to see the end of 2020. Maybe 2021 will be a bit better. Let's hope. It couldn't be much worse. Because it's weird, because I started doing this podcast in about March, maybe April of this year. And I thought I'll do it for a couple of months and then things will go back to normal. And here I am still doing it in December. So that's how it's gone. It's been difficult for all of us to get out, and so I think perhaps reading about bouncing earrings has been uppermost in a lot of our minds, and so I've invited not one but three guests onto Outside In today. I've got outdoor writers Alex Roddy and Chris Townsend, and John Barton from Vertebrate Publishing, which is the foremost producer of mountaineering and climbing books in the UK. And I'm asking them to talk about the books that they've considered have stood out for them for this year. So I've got John with me now. Hello, John. How are you?
Hi, John. Good morning. Oh, good lunchtime.
Good lunchtime, indeed it is. I don't know what the word for that is. So you've helped to sail Vertebrate Publishing through what's been a bit of a storm, really, hasn't it?
It's I'm speaking to you from the west coast of Ireland, and I've just been out here for a week, and we've had one Atlantic storm after another come sweeping across. So it does, and then about 12 hours after they hit us, they get to the UK mainland. So it has felt a little bit like the year where you think, oh, we've just got this storm to weather and then it'll be fine, and then it's like, oh, here's another one.
And here's another one. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's the way it has been. Yeah. So obviously, what books have really stood out for you this year?
Well, I think it would be remiss of me to promote anybody's books that's not a Vertebrate book.
You know, but thought it might.
Which my time is valuable, as we know, John. I would say, though, before I sort of get stuck into self-promotion, I would say the TGO, the Great Outdoors nominations this year for Book of the Year, I think there was some tremendous books there. I think that Young Naturalist book is absolutely fantastic and a breath of fresh air. So I think I would recommend anybody just go seeking out those, you know, that there's about 10 or 12, you know, really strong.
Yeah, yeah, it was very strong this year. That's right.
And equally, the Boardman Tasker Award, I mean, I think there's a, you know, and I'd be first to criticise that it seems to have got diluted a little bit into travel literature.
Oh, right.
Equally, without going there, I think the book that won is an outstanding book.
Remind me which one that was.
It's I will get its name wrong, so I won't get its name. It's a Taiwanese book.
I've not read it, but I've heard of it.
Something about leaves and trees. And I think if you go the last thing I'd say is if you go and look at the program that Kendall Mountain Literature Festival put on this year. You know, a great variety of books with some outstanding authors and some crossover with, what the Boardman Tasker was shortlisting and what the TGO book shortlisted. So I think it's been a very good year for literature, and I've read some tremendous books. If I was to say, you know, what have been the highlights for Vertebrate this year? We made a decision at the start of the COVID outbreak, mainly because I thought it was going to last 2 weeks.
Yeah, I remember you telling me that, yeah.
it's going to last 2 weeks. Why is everybody panicking? We just made a decision just to try and get on with things and get books out. I think in hindsight, we thought books would play a role for people and give them something to read, some escapism. And I think certainly, you know, we've had some great support from readers, you know, and it's been a reciprocal thing. People have got back in touch and said, you know, it's been good being able to read your books all summer and autumn. So in what has been quite a busy schedule for us this year, I think three books I'd like to mention. I think Broken from Ali Bevan, which has just come out. It's a book about it's a book about trail running and fell running, really, and really long runs. It's a little bit like This Is Going to Hurt, the medical comedy book, but for mountain people.
okay, yeah. Ali was on the show just about a week
ago. He was on the show. Yeah, his writing, it's very funny. It's very insightful. It's as a piece of literature, I think it's very strong. It's a very easy read. You know, just pick it up.
Yeah.
This afternoon and wade through it. And you know, he talks about a subculture, and he really brings it to life. And I think it's a, you know, it's a breath of fresh air in that kind of book. It's, you know, it's not a biography. It's not somebody trying to, you know, get their story out and tell the world, you know, how they'd like to be seen.
I think what he was talking about, if I'm right, is like a change in culture, because obviously with the COVID pandemic, meets and races have had to be curtailed, and what's happening is people are going out individually and trying to break fastest known times, and I think it was about 12 different folk doing that sort of thing. I think that's what the book covers, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's about a community. It's about a community of people that go racing,
right?
And they couldn't go racing, so they found something else to go and do, and they found community in that, and they managed to get themselves through the year. But I think the strength of the book is you know, it's entertaining writing. It's just an entertaining book to read.
Yeah.
A little bit like, you know, like I said, the This Is Going to Hurt, which is about gynecology. Uh-huh. You know, you wouldn't immediately think, oh, I must read that book about gynecology.
No, but it's very, I have read that. It's very good. Yeah. So what would be your second choice then?
My second one would be at the opposite end of the mood spectrum. And I think it's Elizabeth Revel's To Live. Uh-huh. So Elizabeth climbed Nanga Parbat in winter, which was the first winter ascent of a 8,000 meter peak by a woman. Just a phenomenal effort. She gets to the summit. It's after dark with a partner, and they get a problem. They get a huge problem on the summit. And the book it's a first person account of her getting out of that predicament, and it's just utterly harrowing. It has no thought for the emotions of the reader. You're just right there with her and these just enormous decisions she's being asked to make. You know, she has a text transponder, a text machine. She can pick up text messages.
Oh, right.
From all around the world, from people trying to get her off the mountain. She knows the only option is really putting herself in a trap, but it gets her lower down the mountain. The book is just phenomenal. I mean, it will go on to be one of the great mountaineering classics, but it's, you know, it's not an easy read.
Sounds a little bit like Simon McCartney's The Bond. Is that right?
It's a little bit like Simon McCartney's Bond, but fundamentally, it doesn't have the happy ending.
okay. Yes, because it ended in tragedy, didn't it?
It does. It sort of, you know, the tragedy is there, and the tragedy is always going to happen, and Elizabeth has an escape from that.
I mean, it is an inextricable part of mountaineering, that dark side, that tragedy, isn't it? And I think it's very challenging to write about it, because I know that even in the limited stuff that I did, you know, it came across some pretty dark moments, but I feel that, you know, if you're going to be true to your subject, if you're going to be true to what you're writing about, you have to cover that as well as the lows and the highs have to be covered, you know.
And I think Elizabeth wrote it. She wrote it for a number of reasons, and she doesn't really want to talk about it since. She wanted to write down what happened, because obviously a lot of people had opinions on what happened. So
she
wrote a very honest, you know, at times very factual account of what happened. And then she talks about her feelings and what was going on. And that comes out in the book. And I think for anybody, I think, you know, for the likes of me, you know, it's essentially an armchair mountaineer these days. I think it's a very, it's an amazing book to read. And I think for somebody who wants to venture into the mountains, I think it's an important book to read.
Yeah, it sounds great. It's one that I'm going to have to read, I think. I these days, I struggle to make the armchair, to be honest. never mind the mountain, you know. And so what's book three, John?
The book three is our motto is inspiring adventure in the company. And we have produced a book called Big Trails, which is, and I think Kathy's been on the show.
Yes, she has. Andrews, is it? No.
Kathy Rogers.
Kathy Rogers, sorry, that's right,
So you do ask me these tricky questions, John, that I've got to come up with straight away. Kathy Smith. So Big Trails is, it's Great Britain and Ireland, and it gives data and information and inspiration to go and walk or run or backpack or fast pack or whatever you want to call it, long distance trails. And I think all we're trying to do there is just inspire people to go and have an adventure. One of the things I contributed on is, you know, I do spend quite a lot of time in the west and southwest of Ireland. I think we've got some wonderful, we have issues in Ireland with rights of access.
Yes, I've heard that.
And I think equally, there's a lot of people who, you know, a lot of initiative from the government down, you know, to make the country more accessible and to develop long distance trails. And I think there's some wonderful trails, as the Sheep's Head and the Beara and, you know, Kerry Way and things like that. There's these wonderful trails. And I think one of the things was the book gave us an opportunity to highlight the work people are doing and these trails. And then obviously, you know, we've got a lot of classic inspirational stuff in the UK, you know, the Pennine Way Dales Way and things like that. So,
yeah. Well, I'm sure it's a sort of book that, everybody's waiting to be sort of released, I suppose, from the various lockdowns and restrictions that we're in. It's the sort of book people are going to rush out and pick up. So it sounds really interesting.
Yeah, we called it the clues on the name on the tin, Big Trails. That's what it's all about.
It does what it says on the tin. I'm very much improved of things like that. So what I'll do is, obviously, I'm going to talk to Chris and I'm going to talk to Alex, and I'll get their ideas too. And then on the podcast page, what I'll do is I'll put a link to all of these books up, so if folk want to know more about them, or we'll go along and buy them and read them themselves, they can do. Okay, well, thanks for talking to me, John. And let's hope you have a much better 2021 than you've had 20.
Yeah, no complaints. I'll see you in the new year, John.
Okay, you take care. Well, I think it's fair to say that my next guest probably spends more time sleeping on the Cairngorm Plateau than any man alive, really. He's an expert on backpacking and long distance walking and outdoor gear, and has written extensively his own books. I think he's I'll have to ask him how many books. I think he's written about 9 or something. And he's also written extensively for The Great Outdoors magazine. And I've done an awful lot more than that, I'm sure. Hello, Chris. Chris Townsend. How are you?
I'm fine, thanks. Hello, John.
How many books is it now then, Chris?
Oh, I lose track, but it's about 25.
25? Oh, God. I didn't realize.
I've been writing them for a long time.
Yeah. Even so, 25 books, quite impressive. So which books have really impressed you this year then?
It's been a difficult choice because there's quite a few.
Right.
But I picked out 4.
Oh, okay. Go ahead. Yeah, cool.
These are, well, there's The Big Rounds by David Linton.
Oh, right. What made you, what attracted you to that one particularly?
I found the concept fascinating, and I've not seen this in a book before. First of all, it's a mixture of a guidebook and a
Right.
storybook. It tells
Okay.
the story of three big rounds done by hill runners,
Oh, right. Okay.
but it also describes them as possible backpacking trips for walkers.
Right. So to tell us what, for people who don't know, what is the concept of a round then?
Well, it started with the most famous one, the Bob Graham Round, which is a round of summits in the Lake District, which Bob Graham did in the 1930s.
Right.
It's basically to run all these hills within 24 hours. That's
Right.
the challenge. And the other ones in the book, there's one that is basically an extended round of Glen Nevis, and one is
Okay.
in Snowdonia. But they're all, big challenges for, if you
Yes.
like, committed hill runners. I mean, I couldn't do any of them in anything like 24 hours. But there's the story of the rounds, how they were first done, people who've broken the records on them, and so on, which I find quite fascinating. But also a description of the routes, but breaking it down so that they would make, for people like me, 4 to 5 day backpacking trips.
People like me probably considerably longer, I would think. Possibly. But
Well,
it makes it possible for us mere mortals to do it.
yes, yep. And as I say, I haven't seen that concept in a book before
No.
of looking at these routes for both runners and walkers.
Yeah, well, that's quite good because it sort of broadens the appeal. Because I have read, quite a few accounts by elite runners and thought, well, there's no way I could ever even look at that. But to broaden it out to mere humans sounds a really good idea. So, what's your next book then, Chris? What have you chosen?
Well, the next one is Walking Through Shadows by Mike Cawthorne.
All right, I've heard of that book, but I've not read it.
I mean, that is a very new book, came out this year. And it's the story of a really tough winter walk in the Highlands, which tends to be Mike Cawthorne's speciality, because an earlier book of his, Hell of a Journey, is about a walk over all the, I think, 1,000 meter summits in the Highlands in winter. But this book, he undertakes in part in memory of a close friend of his who had died in the hills. And to some extent, the walk almost feel the book feels like this was a penance, that he wanted it to be tough, and tough it is, as you can imagine, a long walk in the Highlands in winter. But he really captures the essence, of the Scottish winter, what it's like to be out in it in the hills. I mean, he is, he's a very good writer at capturing atmosphere. There's times when you almost feel you're with him. You're crashing through the snow, wading through frozen burns, trying to keep warm in the tent at night.
And anyone, if anyone knows what that feels like, it's you, isn't it?
But I've never done, a walk as long as this in winter. That's the thing. I think the longest I've done in winter is about 2 weeks.
What a fair, that's a, there's not many people who can have done that, though. And the book is called again
Walking Through Shadows.
Walking Through Shadows. Okay. Why do you think he called it that? Interesting name.
I think it's a double meaning. I mean, there's
Ah, okay.
shadows of his friend.
Right, that
He
makes
goes to
sense.
places that he went to with his friend, or that his
Right.
friend was that. There's also, because it's a winter walk, a lot of it takes place in shadow, in the dark.
In semi-darkness, yes, I know about that. Ah, right. Okay. Particularly this time of year. So that's Walking Through Shadows. And what's your third book then, Chris?
Well, this is another walking book,
Right.
Walking the Great North Line by Robert Twigger.
That's not one I've heard of. Walking.
The Great North Line.
Yeah.
It's an unusual book.
Right.
The author walks camping out at night
Right.
from Stonehenge to Lindisfarne
Right.
on a straighter line as he can manage. And
Okay.
what he's doing is linking various prehistoric and historic sites, which all lie on this line. But really, the Great North Line, gives him a route to walk through England. And
Right. Okay.
he fills the book with all sorts of asides on history, prehistory, philosophy, natural history, and even far more esoteric things for a walking book. He gets into the beat poets, various other works of literature. So I found it quite, a fascinating book, even though I didn't feel that the premise really came to anything. To some extent, the premise of this Great North Line was an excuse for the walk.
Well, that's not a bad thing, is it? So it sounds like quite an unusual book, though, because it sounds very like a he's been able to link in very strongly with the history and the character of the landscape he's walking through. Is that right?
Yes, very much. And with, people he meets, he's very good at doing, short portraits of various characters he meets along the way.
Right.
And of course, as a huge variety, as far as possible, he's in the countryside. But he also, because it's on the route, walks through big towns as
Right.
well.
Right.
One of the things that surprised me about it, now, it's many, many years since I did any wild camping or long distance walking in England.
Right. Yes.
But I was still surprised that he was basically able to do this walk and find somewhere to camp every night. Now he's really not bothered about trespass. He wants
Right.
to stick to his line. He wants to camp. And he always manages to find somewhere where he's basically out of sight and it's unlikely he'll be disturbed.
Right. And did he have any encounters along the way with irate farmers or anything?
He had a few encounters with people about the route. He doesn't have any with the camping,
Well, that's
but I
good.
realized he's I it reminded me, which is very long time ago, when I walked from Land's End to John O'Groats.
Right, yeah.
One of the things I learned very quickly towards the end of the day, in, if you like, rural areas rather than wild areas,
Yeah.
is to start looking out for secluded spots. Look on the map. Oh, there's a little wood over there. I can
Okay.
probably sneak into that and camp, and no one will notice.
Right.
And he's very good at doing that.
Well, that sounds really fascinating. And what's your last choice then?
Well, my last choice, I must confess, is a book I have an interest in because there's a few of my pictures in it, which is Wanderlust Europe by Alex
Ha
Roddy.
ha.
Now, this is
Alex is coming next. Wanderlust Europe. Yeah. Go on.
it's a big picture book, and at first I thought it was going to be one of those books where you've basically got a guide to walks and lots of
Yeah.
nice pictures to look at. Well, it's got the pictures, but in fact, the various essays in the book about the walks are more about the experience of them.
Right,
So
okay.
it's a good book. I haven't read all of it. It's not a book you'd read from cover to cover.
No, it's a big book, isn't it? It's quite an
Yes.
impressive tome, yeah. You wouldn't put it in your rucksack either.
Oh, certainly not, no. But it is a book to dip into. And
Yeah.
I've read quite a few chapters, and some of them I've read, and I thought that sounds really interesting. I'd never thought of going there. Because the other thing is, it's got a few of the obvious routes in,
Yeah,
but it
yeah.
isn't just as books like this tend to be, a compilation of the well-known names, you know, the Tour of Mont Blanc.
Tour de Mont Blanc, yeah, yeah, yeah.
The Pyrenees High Route and these walks.
No, it's
quite a bit... unusual ones that you wouldn't necessarily expect in a book like this.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, no, it's an impressive looking book, I think. Yeah, and some of the pictures are great in it, because one of the I've actually looked at that. Yeah, it really is quite an impressive tome, really. And it covers the major walks of Britain and Europe, doesn't it? Is that probably if you're going to sum it up, I suppose, is that right? Sort of.
I'd say not really. No.
Oh, because okay.
Some of the big well-known ones are not in it.
Right, right.
But all the walks sound really interesting. And they're not necessarily, I mean, there's one here in the Cairngorms, which is through Rothie Mercus and Glenmore Forests.
Right.
Now, that's not, you know, an established long-distance route with a name.
Okay, okay.
I'm not sure I've ever seen it described as a single walk in a book before.
Oh, right. Okay. Okay.
But, so that's what I mean, that all the walks look excellent, but they're not necessarily ones where you can go out, you know, and buy a guidebook to it. Like, as I say, the Tour of Mont Blanc, of which guidebooks available. There's no guidebooks available to this walk in the Cairngorms.
Right. Well, that's really interesting. That sounds really interesting. They've obviously taken a different tone, haven't they? A different take on it.
I think this is, you know, it's Alex Roddy who has done this. You know, having been asked to put the book together, I think he's thought further than just a compilation of, you know, well-known walks. And he's written a fair bit of it himself.
Yeah. Yeah.
Obviously not all of it, because there's some countries in there, I think, especially Europe, where he hasn't been walking either.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
But there's a few other authors, but it's basically his book.
Yes, I mean, I think he wrote a large proportion of it and edited the rest, didn't he? Something like that. So that's great. Well, that's been great, Chris. Thanks very much. That was really interesting to listen to your sort of insights. And what I'll do is I'm going to put links to all these books that you've mentioned on the podcast page, and who knows, in these rather dark days we're in, maybe some of these books will give folk inspiration. Thanks very much, Chris Townsend. Thank you.
Oh, thank you. Great.
Well, thanks to Chris Townsend. And my next guest on the show is Alex Roddy. Alex is the editor of Sidetrack magazine. He's also a mountain writer in his own right. He, as Chris was talking about, he's just sort of co-written and edited Wanderlust Europe, and he's written extensively for the Great Outdoors magazine, and he's an expert on, I think, lightweight backpacking and long distance walking, and it's of course Alex Roddy. Hi Alex, how are you?
Hi John, not too bad, thanks.
Good. Is that a fair description of you, do you think?
Yes, I think that's a fair description.
Try not to be too insulting, you know. So how are you anyway? And well, which book stood out for you this year then?
Well, I'm not bad, thanks. You know, dealing with them, not being able to travel here in the Flatlands, but outdoor books have kept me going this year, most definitely.
Right, okay.
And the three books I'd like to particularly point out are The Unremembered Places by Patrick Baker, and Wildwood by Roger Deakin.
Right.
And finally, Hell of a Journey by Mike Cawthorn.
Oh, Mike had a mention already, but let's start with your first book. Which one was that again? Sorry.
Sure. Yeah. The Unremembered Places. That's subtitle Exploring Scotland's Wild Histories by Patrick Baker.
Oh, right. And what drew you to that book?
I've previously read The Cairngorms: A Secret History by that author, and it's this great book about I guess you could say the hidden histories throughout Scotland. So there are some places. It's like an exploration into a number of different places, such as the Blackwater Dam at Kinlochleven, and there's also Jock's Road going over the Mounth. and other places, and it's really kind of the hidden stories in the landscape. In many cases, right. kind of stories that are at risk of disappearing because right. either they're carried through kind of verbal culture and they haven't been written down, or in some cases the landscape itself is being kind mm-hmm. of damaged by development and so on. So yeah, it's a really fascinating book. I particularly love the bit about the kind of ruins of kind of ancient chapels and things on crannogs in lakes.
Very unusual. What was his theory then about why they were built, if you can remember?
There's kind of a lot about the kind of mythology and lore of islands as these kind of symbolic places of isolation, and the kind of journey to an island is kind of compared to a spiritual journey itself. And there's right. this great bit about finding this relic known as St. Finian's Bell, which had lay undisturbed for centuries at one of these ancient chapels. And at the time when he wrote it, you could literally just go and ring this bell. And there were all these legends associated with it. But sadly, after writing the book, but I believe before it was published, the bell was stolen. So you can't go and see it now.
yeah, that sounds fairly typical. Yeah, I did hear actually that the crannogs were actually built mainly to keep away from the midges, but I don't know whether that's true.
I can believe that.
and you would go, as you know, the Highland midge is fairly formidable, and you would go to quite extreme lengths, in my opinion, to get away from the midges. So tell us about your second book again then.
Yeah, so the second book is called Wildwood, A Journey Through Trees by Roger Deakin. And this is really a modern classic of nature writing. It was published in 2007. And it's really a book about the kind of natural history and human culture of trees and kind of just forest lore in general. So the author, who died a few years ago, I believe, he lived in a house very kind of close to nature in the Suffolk countryside. So that this is an environment that I know quite well because I grew up in Suffolk.
Right, right, yeah.
And I think it was in an Elizabethan manor house that was kind of, it's kind of described in a very evocative way as kind of almost permeated by nature itself. So you've got kind of roots growing through the walls and you've got wild creatures kind of coming into his living room at night and stuff. Oh. It's this really kind of richly evoked the description of the forest he lives in, and the book is basically an exploration of forests, not just in the UK but also around the world actually. So he begins in British forests and he explores other areas, and there's quite a lot about the kind of culture of the walnut tree as well. Absolutely fascinating stuff. You know, anyone who enjoys spending time in forests, I highly recommend it. It's really a well-deserved classic. It's kind of a similar quality to Thoreau's classic Walden. So, you know, the kind of it really has a talent for noticing and describing the kind of tiny details that you might miss if you're not paying attention.
Oh, right. I've not really heard of that book before. It sounds really interesting.
I recommend it. It's fantastic. Yeah.
Because the significance of forestry is something that we're becoming increasingly aware of, right, isn't it?
Oh, it is, yeah. And in some respects, you know, the book is even more relevant now than when it was written over a decade ago. You know, there's a quote that kind of really sticks in my mind, which is, the enemies of woods are always the enemies of culture and humanity. And, you know, as right. we've seen in this last year or so, you know, this country doesn't always treat its woods very well.
No.
So it's the book's message is eternally relevant.
Well, that sounds fascinating. Yeah, really great. And what's your final book?
So finally, we've got Hell of a Journey by Mike Cawthorn. And the title really tells you everything you need to
yeah,
know about.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
it really is one hell of a journey. So in the late 90s, I think it's 97 to 98 winter, Mike Cawthorn set out on a self-supported continuous walk over all of Scotland's 1,000 meter peaks.
Right.
In Winnipeg. And it's basically the account of this journey. And it's the most remarkable. I mean, this, as far as I know, this feat has not been repeated since. Steve Perry did a continuous feat, a continuous round of the Monroes, mm-hmm. but I don't think anyone else has done this specific journey. And it's just this amazing book of kind of winter and isolation and just the kind of immersion in it, of it all. And it really is as you'd expect. You know, he is stormbound for days in Bothies. There's a very memorable bit where he's watching water being picked up out of the River Nevis by gusts of wind and flung vertically into the air.
Oh, yeah.
That kind of thing. And even just the preparation for this journey is immense, really. He spent 3 weeks burying food caches throughout the Highlands.
Oh, I was wondering how he managed that. Okay.
And the problem is half the time he'd come across these food caches and the food would have been eaten by mice. So,
oh, right.
So some of the sections of his journey, he goes quite hungry, actually.
Yeah, I can imagine so. Yeah, yeah. And they tend to be fairly industrious at finding things, mice, don't they? Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, there was one account where a mouse had chewed a small hole through the bottom of this plastic container and it got in and eaten everything apart from the tins. He did have some canned food, which was just as well, as it turns out. But it's just this glorious book, and it's got some really fine writing as well. So the quote that really stands out for me in this one is, in a technological age of great material comfort, we're still incredibly plagued by unease, a sense of disenchantment at the heart of things, however we define it. And paradoxically, the greater our comfort, the more profound our disquiet or boredom. So he's really kind of explaining why he felt driven to go and do this.
So that's why I spend all this time in Bothies. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It does make sense. There is something. I suppose I've not really thought about that. I mean, there is something that in discomfort and hardship, it perhaps, I suppose it connects you to yourself better, doesn't it?
I think it does. Yeah, I think it does. I mean, obviously, if everyday life were not as comfortable, maybe we wouldn't seek this. But the fact is that in modern Western living, most of us live relatively comfortable lives where our physical needs are met.
And,
the soul kind of pushes back against that, I think, sometimes.
I think that's very true. I didn't think we'd get to such a profound point. This is a very unusual moment for Outsiding, I have to say. We're plumbing the depths of psychology. But that sounds I really must look out those books. They sound really good. So what about yourself, Alex? What are you up to at the moment?
Well, I'm working on a novel by Andrew Terrell. So he's hired me to edit his... narrative non-fiction books about his long distance hiking in the late 90s. So he did this big hike from Calabria to Calabria south of Norway to the far north. Sorry, I'm getting this the wrong way around. Calabria south of Italy to the far north of Norway.
Right.
And tremendously enjoying that. Very, very good book.
Great. So you're kept on. Well, let's hope, we come out of this lockdown fairly soon and you're able once again to wander the hills as we all love to do.
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks very much for giving us your selections, Alex. I really enjoyed that. Thanks, then.
Thanks.
Well, thanks very much to Alex Roddy, Chris Townsend and John Barton for taking part in this podcast. Needless to say, what I'll do is I'll put details of the books they've mentioned on the podcast page, so you can follow those up and have a look at them if you're interested. When I started producing these little podcasts, I thought probably I'd do about a dozen or so, and it was really for something to do in lockdown. But here we are, the end of the year, and I think that's something like my 50th episode. I don't know, and I'm still going to go strong into next year, unfortunately. So just wanted to say to all my listeners, everybody who contributes to the program, thanks very much for taking part. Thanks very much for listening. I do hope I've managed to give you a little light relief at times from the mundane drudgery of our existence at the moment. I'm pleased to say that 2020 is behind us now, and I'm looking forward to 2021 because it's got to be better, please. So in the meantime, I hope all of you managed to have a nice Christmas, and thanks very much for listening, and have a happy new year. Bye-bye.